this, you realize that you have never had a correct perception in your life. Okay? Until the direct perception of emptiness. Okay? Sort of depressing. Okay? Question. When you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, are you having a correct perception when you have all these thoughts? No. Okay? Things don't change that way. Okay? In other words, when you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, A, you realize you've never had a correct perception. B, you realize you're not having them anymore right now either. Since you came down out of the direct perception of emptiness. But what's the big difference? You know you're crazy. Okay, I don't mean crazy, I'm being, metaphor. But it's a big difference between before and after seeing emptiness directly. Now you realize that even though you're now seeing things again as self-existent, as coming from their own side, as having their own nature, you don't believe your own eyes. I always say it's like Jason tied, is it Jason? Tied to the mast? Who went after the golden fleece? I think it's him. Ulysses? I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, they're passing the land of the sirens. Who's that? Ulysses. Okay, let's say Ulysses. They're passing the land of the sirens. Sirens are these foxy ladies who stand at the edge of a dangerous shore and sing these beautiful songs. And the sailors always turn left into the land and they crash and they get eaten by the sirens or something like that. So Ulysses has heard about these sirens. So he asks his men, tie me to the mast, tight. I'm the captain, but after you tie me to the mast, don't listen to me anymore. Whatever I say. And put wax in your ears. And roll like hell. And never, don't turn into the sirens. But I want to hear what it sounds like, you know. So they tie him up, they put wax in their ears, they go past the land of the sirens, and he's like going crazy. He's like, let me go. You know, untie me, we gotta go see these ladies, you know. And your mind is just like that. You realize it at that time, you see? And you can't even remember what you saw enough to not do it anymore. Okay, I mean, you see what I mean? Like you know what you're seeing is wrong, but you can't stop yourself. By the way, the day you stop yourself completely is just about nirvana. Okay? The last mental affliction is the one that makes you see things as self-existent. Okay? So actually, on the day you finish that, you've reached nirvana. All right? So that's a long way off. How long? Call it seven lifetimes. See, between the moment you come down and seven lifetimes hence when you reach nirvana and enlightenment in this case, you will still see things as self-existent. We call that illusion. Gyumatabu. That whole seven lifetimes, the way things look to you, is illusion. Because you know they don't exist the way they seem to exist. But you can't do anything about it. You can't change the way you look at them. But you work on it. Don't interrupt me about this on this tonight, okay? Maybe at the end we'll answer some questions. But we gotta go through this on a certain intensity, okay? So you know that you're not seeing things correctly. And you know they don't exist the way you think they exist. And that's the meaning of illusion in Buddhism. It doesn't have any other meaning. Okay? Get used to it. I see this crap in books about dualism. It doesn't mean anything. It's ridiculous. Okay? Forget it. What does dualism mean? It means, what it really means is the way things really are and the way things look to be are different, and that's dual. You see what I mean? Does the mind become emptiness in the direct perception of shunyata? No! Come on! The mind is a changing, mental stuff. You know, emptiness is 100% unchanging. Negative thing, the mind is a positive thing. That's all just like fairy tales, made up by people who have not understand emptiness, they haven't seen emptiness, and they are really hurting people by putting out crap about emptiness when they don't understand it and they haven't seen it, okay? So you have to be, about this subject, you've got to be a tough ass and call a spade a spade. That stuff is crap, okay? It's not true, okay? The only dualism going on while you're in the direct perception of emptiness, are you aware of yourself? Can't be. So you can't be aware of the distinction between the subject and the object. Does that mean there's no subject? What, you disappear for 20 minutes? Does that mean there's no object? Emptiness isn't there? Does that mean you become the object? What, you become a negative permanent thing? Unchanging to come on. You know, it's just written by people who don't understand it, okay? And haven't experienced it, okay? So forget all that stuff. Dualism, crap, and what was the other one? Illusion. So illusion only means that. It doesn't mean this pen doesn't exist. Come up here, let me poke your eye out with it. Okay? Anyone who thinks that that's what illusion means. You see what I mean? It's not like that. Illusion means the way it looks after that and the way it really is different, and you understand that. But you can't stop seeing it that way. And that's illusion. Forget everything else. Okay? Okay, that's my tough guy. Alright. That's about all I can think of right now. Okay, you can take all those realizations and group them into four parts. Some of them relate to suffering. Oh, sorry, one more. Okay, put one more down. You realize on the day you come out of the direct perception of emptiness that you have never done an unselfish thing in your life. Okay? Period. Okay? Even while you sat in the temple and recited prayers, in the back of your mind, every person who has not reached the direct perception of emptiness is thinking, do they realize I memorized this prayer? Is anyone listening? You know, I know better than he does, you know. And you're praying for some guy who just died a terrible death of AIDS or something, and you're just worried about whether or not people notice that you know the ritual. And don't say you don't have it. Every being who has not seen emptiness directly is swimming in these thoughts all day long. Okay? Incapable of a non-self-interested act. Capable of struggling with your self-interest. You know what I mean? Capable of working against it on principle. You see what I mean? Okay, I really want this cookie. It's the last honey-flavored peanut butter cookie in Gunsto. I'm a Buddhist monk. I just taught Tonglen. Okay. Take it, you know. But in your heart, you're like fighting. You know what I mean? And we're all like that. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, until the day you see emptiness directly, you are like that. And on the day you have your first direct perception of bodhicitta and emptiness, you realize you've been doing that your whole life. Okay? And it's a horrible trap that you've been in your whole life. Okay? And you can't get out of it until you see emptiness directly. I'll say right now, you cannot remove a mental affliction from your mind until the day you see emptiness directly. Period. Okay? Hopeless. Impossible to remove anger, jealousy, desire, competitiveness, pride without seeing emptiness directly. It's impossible. Okay? All the other methods are what we call band-aids. Okay? Yeah, you can hold your pride down. You know, get down there. No, get down. You know, okay? For a few minutes, you see what I mean? Desires, dislikes of other people, things like that. You can wrestle with them, but you cannot destroy them until the day you see emptiness directly. Impossible. Okay? So what do you got now? Some of these realizations relate to suffering. Like what? Like I saw my death. Like I realized I haven't had a pure thought my whole life. You know, things like that. Some things relate to the source of suffering. I have never had a direct perception, correct perception, my whole life. 65 times 60 times 60 times 24 times 7 times 52 times 47. Okay, or 6, I don't remember. But, that many incorrect perceptions I've had. Okay, like you could lump these into the source of suffering. I have not been able to do an unselfish act in my whole life. Okay, like these are suffering. Into suffering, you can put that thing about reading other people's minds. You think it's fun? You know? No. Okay. I think it's a godsend that we're protected from it. Okay. No, it's bad enough to be in your own mind. probably there's some kind of automatic mechanism that you're not allowed to read other people's minds until you can take it. Okay? So those go into suffering and where suffering comes from. Then we can say, you can see the end. You see what I mean? You saw your own enlightenment. 100% absolute, guaranteed, certain, enlightened in 7 lifetimes. Do you know what this guy feels like? Do you know what it's like to know? You see what I mean? Then who's going to tell you anything? You know what I mean? Who's going to sell you a vacuum cleaner? Or, you know, who's going to sell you on some other idea or anything else? What do you need from anybody after that moment? You see what I mean? You're not capable after that of needing almost anything. Okay? You saw your own enlightenment. So who's going to... What interest do you have in any worldly thing after that? You know, like zero, nothing. Okay, who can talk you out of it? Forget it. You know, I had a pramana, I had a tema. That's the meaning of pramana. That's your first real pramana. I had a direct, correct perception of emptiness. I saw my own enlightenment. What do I need? You know, Kale Jigme, Nagarjuna said, fearless, totally fearless. Don't need anything in this life anymore. And know you're going out. Know you're on the way out. It's like you stepped onto a conveyor belt and you are going to be free in 7 lifetimes and you know it. And you're absolutely guaranteed. Okay? It's called Jin Shupa. Say Jin Shupa. Stream enterer. I think nowadays it should be called conveyor belt started. Seriously. It's exactly that idea. You is on a track that will lead in 7 lifetimes to enlightenment. You've seen the enlightenment directly. You know what they will not call you. Add that to the list of realizations. Okay? You know what they will not call you. They will not call you Michael the Buddha or something like that. Okay? There's something extremely important in knowing what they will not call you. You can figure it out later. Okay? But within 7 lifetimes, you see it, you know it, you're a stream enterer. You don't have any worries, any normal worries. You don't have any kind of problems with other people, serious problems. You not have any interest in doing bad deeds. Nothing. Okay? Nothing. Like that. Out. Okay? Guaranteed. Can it come faster? Yes. How? If the person practices tantra, they can speed up the process. What's the relationship between tantra and this perception? It's the battery that drives tantra. Okay? The perception of emptiness. Is it necessary to perceive emptiness directly to have tantric experiences? No. Okay? All right? Okay, we'll start. Tonight is the single most important class of all the classes. No kidding. Okay. Tonight we're going to discuss the direct perception of emptiness. All right, and that came in the Diamond Cutter course. It was class number 6. So we're into that tonight. And I'm just going to go from a historical basis. Like, if you wanted to see emptiness directly, how would it happen? All right. First of all, you need to meet an extraordinary teacher in this life. I mean, you've had millions of lifetimes getting ready. Okay. Seriously. But in this life, you have to meet a teacher who can teach you the right scriptures, the right study. And it might take something like 1,000 hours of study or something. Okay? Seriously. Very serious now. Tonight's very serious, for one. Okay? Secondly, you would need to be helping people in general. Okay? I mean, you'd have to be serving old people, sick people, needy people, like that. Like a good part of your life and a good part of your activity would have to be helping people who need help. Okay? And that, I'm talking about the conditions you need in this life to see emptiness directly. Okay? Most importantly, although I don't bring the subject up here, would be serving your lama. I don't go over that in these courses. That's not a part of these courses. Because it would seem self-interested, you see, if I said, bring your bank books next week. And, okay? So I'm talking from a theoretical viewpoint, okay? You have to have a lama. You have to serve that lama. And I'm talking build them a house, go work for them, and support what they're interested in. You know, something like that. I mean, I'm not saying me. I'm saying whoever your lama would be, if you want to see emptiness directly, you have to put in some big time energy. Pretty much devote your life to that cause, to that purpose. You know, when I went to see Ken Rinpoche the first time, I gave him my bank book. You know, and he gave it back to me. He said, "Thank you." You see, you have to do it. And he said, "I don't need it." And he did need it, but he gave it back to me. You know, and it's like that. That's the way it should go. Okay, and you need that kind of commitment to that lama to see emptiness directly. Okay, you have to find your personal lama, and then I'm your teacher. You have to find your lama. Okay, you have to find the person that you have a connection to. And then you have to connect with them, and you have to serve them. And the karma of that is that you will see emptiness. Okay, so serving others, serving your lama, studying like crazy. Okay, must be meditating regularly, every day, 1 to 2 hours, heavy duty meditation. There's a certain platform from which you see emptiness. It's a certain deep kind of meditation. Samden Dambo Nyando Mito Me. A very specific, out of all the thousands of meditative states, you have to be able to get into that one, or you will not see emptiness. Okay? In that state, I mean, to just describe it generally, your sense objects are shut down. You can't see anything, hear anything, smell anything, taste anything, feel anything. If somebody came in the room and snapped their fingers, you wouldn't hear it. Okay? If somebody brought pomfrey, or McDonald's french fries in the room, you wouldn't smell them. Okay? If, you know what I mean? Like that. I mean, your concentration is perfect. Okay? You need to reach that state to see emptiness directly. You have no hope to see emptiness directly if you are not meditating at that level. You have no hope of reaching that level if you don't do it every day. Okay? If you do it every day, you have some hope of reaching that level. Okay? Those are all the preliminaries. Okay? Those are the main preliminaries. Now I'd like to talk about the sequence of events that happens just before you see emptiness directly. Okay? We're talking in the two or three weeks before you see emptiness directly. Okay? You should have been studying a subject called Okay, it's J-E-D. Okay. Say chi.
Chi.
Chedak.
Chedak.
Chi.
Chi.
Chedak.
Chedak.
Okay. Chi means like quality. And chidag means characteristic. And I have to explain that a little bit. By the way, it's generally translated as generals and specifics, or set and subset, and it's a wrong translation. Okay, it's not the point. Okay, what's the point? The point is this. this gets hard, okay? It's a very, very deep, you must learn it. It's not the subject tonight, but you have to at least hear it. Okay. Think about the quality called car. There's a quality, car. Say car. Okay. It's a quality. You see, it's a quality. Now, what things are characteristic of this quality? What things exhibit this quality? Fords, Chevrolets, Toyotas, Nissans, Honda. Okay. Those are chedaks. Okay. They are the chedak part. Chi means car. I didn't say what? A car. I didn't say the car. I said car. Okay, car is a concept. Car is a picture you have in your mind. Okay? And you have to get used to that. Car is just a concept. I didn't say a car or the Honda or the Chevy or anything like that. Car. Okay? You have to get used to that. You have to think about it deeply. Okay, car. And then you have to think, when you see a Honda or a Ford or a Chevy, what is it that allows you to say car? What is it in your mind that allows you to recognize it as a car? This is what Buddhist logic is devoted to, Dharmakirti. This is what Master Dharmakirti. This is what is car? Okay? And how come you can perceive something as a car? Why do you recognize something as a car? Okay? Car. What is car? Okay? And you have to think about that. Car. As opposed to a Chevy, a Ford, a car. Okay? Car. Carness as a quality. Okay? And you start having extraordinary realizations about this subject. Okay? So, if you want to see emptiness directly, here's all the things you got to throw into the stew, into the pot. Got to be serving a lama. Got to be serving other people. Okay? Got to be studying your ass off. Got to be meditating a lot. Okay? Should be living in a quiet place where you can concentrate on these things. Okay? And then, on top of all that, you must, you know, how do you say, confront the idea. What is the quality? What is the characteristic of that? What is something which is characteristic of that quality? Okay? I don't say a characteristic, I say something characteristic of that quality. And you must confront this problem. You have to spend hour after hour after hour worrying about, why did he get up there and say car, 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 car? What's the big thing about car? Okay? Where is car? What's car look like? Where does car stay? Okay? And you must confront these questions. You must cogitate these things. You must, if you want to see emptiness directly. Okay? And then what is the relationship between car and a particular car? Okay? You must think about it deeply. Okay? And if you have not done the other things that I mentioned, it'll seem like a ridiculous exercise to you. You see what I mean? If you have done the other things I mentioned, you'll get it. It's like a koan. Okay? It's like some kind of thing. You know, if you've been serving a lama, if you've been serving the Dharma, if you've been helping poor people, old people, sick people, big time. I'm not talking once in a while. I'm talking most of your day. Okay? Then when someone teaches you chichara, a light goes off. Okay, by the way, just before this you start having amazing realizations about Thakpa and Mithakpa. Say Thakpa, Mithakpa. Thakpa, Mithakpa. Which is changing things, unchanging things. You know, what does it mean to be a changing thing? What does it mean to be an unchanging thing? Okay? Badly translated as permanent, impermanent. Forget the translation permanent, impermanent. Okay? There's two levels of impermanence. There's two levels of changing. One is obvious. You take a coffee cup, you drop it, it breaks. That's what we call obvious impermanence or obvious changing nature of the cup. Okay? There's a subtle nature of changing that's going on all the time. There's a subtle flux in which things exist, you know. And if you study this subject deeply, meditate hard, serve your lama hard, serve other people hard, meditate a lot every day, devote yourself to that, then you'll start to have some extraordinary realizations about, you'll perceive the subtle impermanence of things, which is just short of perceiving emptiness. It's difficult, okay? You perceive the subtle changing nature of things. It's a very difficult, it's a high spiritual state to get to. Okay, so you start to go through that, then you realize things about quality, car. Okay, then comes the big moment. Let it go. Say, Chicho. By the way, I'm sorry it's so hot. Ignore the heat. This is extremely important. This will save your life. Okay? Say, Chicho. 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 Chicho means thing in this case. Okay? Chok means the highest. Okay? Highest thing in the world. It's a level you reach just before you see emptiness. So we have to say, highest thing in the world for someone who hasn't seen emptiness yet. Okay? Once you see emptiness directly, that's a whole higher thing. Okay? But in the meantime, we'll call this Chicho. Okay? Chicho. Chicho is the final few hours of a thing called Jorlam. Jorlam is a whole couple of months. It could go on for a couple months, maybe a year or two, in which you start to understand emptiness intellectually. Chicho. Chicho is the final few hours of a thing called Jorlam. Jorlam is a whole couple of months. It could go on for a couple months, maybe a year or two, in which you start to understand emptiness intellectually, like popcorn. I call it popcorn. You know, you've been serving this Lama, you've been really had great faith in this person, they've been feeding you Dharma big time, you've been serving sick people, old people, you've been reading heavy, you've been meditating heavy, and then you start to get into Jorlam. Jorlam means path of preparation. Preparation for what? To see emptiness directly. Okay? Goes on for a couple months maybe, and you're having all of these, I call it popcorn, you know, you know, in your mind, and you're like, wow, wow, that's impermanence. Wow, I get it. That's car. I get it. That's how, yeah, yeah, I understand that, you know, and you're having this thing going on, and your concentration is getting better and better as the days go by. Because of the virtue of serving this Lama, keeping your morality, meditating well, you suddenly you're able to see things you were not able to see before, and it just starts going like that. And it starts to accelerate as the day comes closer, okay? Like every day something's happening, and you're starting to understand things like boom, 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 okay? Then you get to Chichok. Chichok is the final hours of the path of preparation, okay? And I'll describe it to you. You're standing there early in the morning, making your Lama the cup of tea he likes to have every morning. Let's say it's like 9 o'clock, 8:30. And you're sitting there and you put an aluminum pot, you fill it up with water, you put it on the stove, you turn on the stove, and you stand there watching the pot. You know, it's just another day, you've had some pretty heavy study recently, and you're watching the pot, and then suddenly something happens to you, okay? You're looking at the pot, and suddenly you realize that you are watching the image of a pot in your mind, okay? For the first time in your life, you realize you're watching an image in your mind. This is a chi. This is a quality. Okay? You got to get used to that. There's a thing called car. And there's a thing called pot. I'm not saying a pot, the pot. I'm saying pot. And you realize all this time you've been watching pot. And not a pot or the pot or the pot out there or anything like that. You've been watching a mental image of a pot. All the time in your life, up to this moment, you've been looking at things that you thought existed out there on the stove, and you realize that you are actually watching an image in your mind. Okay? And it's like, boom! Okay? Like, can it cook water? Of course, it is. It happens to be cooking water every morning. Okay? Is it out there on the stove? No. Where is it? In your mind. It's an image in your mind. Okay? And you're sitting there, and you realize that the only data you're getting from the outside is a gleam over here and a black horizontal thing over here. That's the candle, right? But you realize that all you really ever get as information from the outside, your eye is always going like this, you see? You never see a whole pot. You can't see a whole pot. But you think you're seeing a whole pot. See, I mean, it's impossible to see a whole pot. You can't watch the right side while you're watching the left side. You can't see a pot unless you see the right and left side. It's impossible what's going on here, okay? You're not seeing a pot. Your eye is like that. Many milliseconds, it's like flash of silver color over there. Little bit of black stripe over there. A bit of a convex thing over there, which is a bubble, right? But really all the eye can see is shapes and colors. Shapes and colors. Got some line over there. Got a curve over here. Got some silver over there, and what happens? The mind says, pot. Okay? Must be a pot. Actually, all you've got is like 10 clues. You don't have a pot yet. You can't see a pot. Get used to it. It's impossible. The human eye cannot see a pot. You can't see a pot unless you see enough of the parts of the pot to think pot, and you can't see those many parts at once. You never see the whole pot. Okay? For all you know, it could be a cardboard drawing and there's only this two-dimensional thing. But your mind is filling it in quite perfectly. And you have this perfect pot in your mind. It's actually only about half an inch high or a quarter of an inch high. And it feels like it's back here. When it happens, you know, you're like, there's this, you know, sensation that you're really watching something back around here. Okay? And you're like, wow, I'm not watching a pot. I'm watching my own picture of a pot in my own mind. Okay? And you're like, stunned. Okay? It's a very, very high state of realization. You just saw what? Emptiness?
No.
No, it's what we call dependent origination. For the first time in your life, you saw what you've really been doing your whole life with every single object you ever looked at. And for the first time, you just caught yourself. And it's like, boom. You know, it's like you just got very close to seeing emptiness. You are now on the cusp of seeing emptiness. We can call you the highest normal person in the world. Okay? And you could be some schmuck kid standing there watching the pot on the stove, but you just became one of the spiritual giants of the universe. Seriously, not kidding. Okay? You just saw what's really been going on for millions of years in your own mind, and you never ever realized it. Okay? According to Buddhism. Okay? And suddenly you're like, wow, I'm not looking at a pot at all. I'm looking at a picture of a pot in my own mind. And that's what I've been calling pot all this time. Okay? Huge realization. They're just standing there. You know, water's boiling away. Okay. Then you come out of that. It takes maybe, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. Okay? You finish the cup of tea, take it upstairs to your lama, give him the tea, and then go do your morning practice. So you go to this temple, sit down near this pillar on the right side of the back. Okay? Sit down there, and you're alone, and you're doing your meditation. And you go into you go into this special state of meditation, which is very, it's samadhi. It's perfect samadhi. Okay? You go into this absolute deep concentration. Okay? And then you see emptiness directly. Okay? And you have the experience of seeing emptiness directly. Okay? How long does it last? Maybe 20 minutes. What does it feel like? Indescribable. Okay? It's a higher reality. Okay? Everything you've ever seen in your life belongs to what we call level one reality. We call it the reality that's lying to you. Kunzo Gemba. Okay? Deceptive reality. It's not what it seems. Okay? But your mind takes it that way. Okay? Emptiness is a totally different, higher level of reality. During the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot perceive any normal object. Impossible. Cannot. Okay? So I'll ask you some questions. Can you say to yourself, as you're seeing emptiness directly the first time, man, I did it, you know? No. Why? I, Michael Roach, is not ultimate reality. Did is not ultimate reality. It is not ultimate reality. The sound, I did it, is not ultimate reality. The thought, I did it, is not ultimate reality. These are all normal reality. Okay? You can't have a perception of normal reality during that time. Okay? Impossible. Only a direct communion with emptiness. Okay? And your mind is just like in it, and it stays there. Okay? You must be in deep meditation. People who say you see emptiness directly, chopping wood or something like that, bullshit. Not true. Okay? You must be in deep meditation. Okay? And then suddenly you're in this direct perception of emptiness. Okay? And that's it. You are watching your mind takes on the aspect of emptiness. Your mind does not become emptiness because it's a changing thing. And emptiness never changes. But it's mirroring emptiness. Due to the silence of the mind, it's able to mirror emptiness, and you are in direct communion with emptiness. Your mind has the aspect of emptiness, or in the way that a mirror has the aspect of a red suit that you put in front of it or something like that, okay? And that's all. Your mind is totally calm, and it's reflecting emptiness. And you're in the direct perception of emptiness, okay? Then you come down. Okay, that meditative level belongs to a different realm. We're in the desire realm. That technically belongs to the form realm. Okay? So you have this feeling of descending out of the meditation. Okay? It's an actual sensation of descending. Have you been 12 feet off the ground or something? No. Where was your body? Parked in the desire realm. Where was your mind? It reached the form realm. So you do have a sensation of coming down, okay? A brief sensation of coming down. But you're not physically coming down at all, okay? Then you sit there. By the way, that's called Runtum. That whole process. Say Luntum? Luntum? Luntum means that 20 minutes or 30 minutes that you're in the direct perception of emptiness. Okay? By the way, do you know how much time has gone by? Can't. Why? The perception of time is a relative perception. Okay? It belongs to lower reality. Cannot perceive time itself. You don't know how long you've been in. Okay? Glance up the clock. Oh, 20 minutes or something. Okay. All right. You come out, feeling of coming down, and then for the next 10 hours, extraordinary events happen to you. Extraordinary realizations. More than you've had in your whole life or in thousands of lifetimes. In the next 10 hours, more great spiritual levels will be blasted over than in the thousands of lifetimes before. Okay? It's like in one day you move a million miles spiritually. Okay? And you are blasting one by one over these realizations that you never dreamed of. Okay? And they're all happening in that one day. Okay? I'll give you a list of them. Okay? And this is in no particular order. Okay? All of these realizations can be grouped in, well, I'll tell you later, okay? Okay. Number one, you see your future enlightenment. Okay? You know you will be a Buddha, you know how long it will take. Precisely. Meaning, very typically, 7 more lifetimes. Okay? Very typically. They call it lendumar, you see emptiness. It's like some kind of special feeling you get out of it, okay? So here are the various projects that are going on. If I mention your name, you have to have a 2-minute speech ready next week. The more interesting it is, the more people will sign up for your project. Where's John Brady? He's back there. Very interesting project. He'll be running the operations director of ACIP. ACIP is a project to input all the scriptures in the world, so they don't get lost. Okay, there are 200,000 incredibly precious Tibetan books. They are being lost as we speak. They were burned by the Chinese. Only a few got out. There's a few copies in Russia, a few copies in Yale Library that don't even know about it, stuff like that. And we have to try to save them and get them on CD-ROM, get them on the internet. They're free. Okay, we have 2,300 finished. We have 197,700 to go. Okay, I think it'll take 150 years. Okay, but we gotta start. We gotta keep going. Can't stop. We have about 300 Tibetans working on it right now. Refugees. Mongolia. I just got the numbers today from the television station. They went out to the countryside and did a survey of how many people watched the show. 80% of Mongolians watch the Diamond Cutter Sutra. That's it was 550,000 people watched each night. Okay, half a million people each night. So you gotta go back and do some more. Okay, you want to work on that. I'll help do that presentation. I'm hoping to stick it on Thomas Wilson. Okay, but I don't know yet. Abbott Sterling, Janice Braden might help out, but I'm not like putting any pressure on you. Okay. Godstow Retreat Center, John and Nancy are working on that, and you know, basically to have within an hour and a half of New York a place where you can go and try to see emptiness directly. Okay, those of you who've been there, it's 100 acres of beautiful forested property with a nice home there, and we've got to build a retreat center, you know. We've got to get those lime sticks out and start building some cabins there. Okay, ACI New York, these classes will go on in small guerrilla units in people's homes over the next 3 years. You have to finish the 18 courses or you don't get the dessert, which is Tantra. And we have to schedule that, we have to arrange that, we have to get that going. John Steele will be directing that. We still need help with the classes that are still going to happen in New York for this year, okay? Extension courses, we're going to have courses in Ireland, Mongolia, Kathmandu, Bodh Gaya, Goa, Sarah Monastery, Santa Cruz, Northern California, San Francisco, San Jose. There'll be 6 week, 2-3 week courses in Arizona for the next 3 years, twice a year. I expect we already have like I expect a few hundred people to go to all the courses in Asia. We expect about 2,000 people a night in Mongolia. We need help with all those things. Okay, those are extension courses. Three Jewels Outreach Center and Free Library. We'd like it to continue. It serves a very beautiful group of people in a very unique way, in a way that you can't get elsewhere in New York.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a whole separate crew of people to help run both the commercial side and the outreach side. We're talking to Brooks about doing the commercial side. And so if you're interested in that, it serves a lot of people right now, okay? And I'd like to see it keep going while I steal Annie Pelma for a retreat. We have a huge program to try to put out all the materials in English, okay? We went to the Tibetan stage, we went to the Tibetan-English hybrid stage, and now we'd like to go across to the English stage. And we'd like to see a lot of these lectures have been typed in. There's about 1,000 people around the world who have offered to help type these talks in the computer. We don't have the staff to feed them tapes and stuff like that, okay? So we need people to do that. We have 1,000 people in the correspondence courses. We don't have anyone to help grade the papers. We have hundreds of prisoners taking the correspondence courses. We can't handle the demand, okay? We need help producing the courses. We don't charge people who can't pay for them. So everyone calls us, and we need help, okay? We don't have any paid staff at this place. We are serving several thousand people, okay? And the staff that we have is like having breakdowns every day, okay? We really need help, okay? And it's a pleasure, you see what I mean, to serve thousands of people like that. Arizona will be building a university out there. Buddhist University. It will have philosophy that you've studied here. It will have traditional medicine, like a real course, 5 to 10 years to become a real Tibetan doctor. Sacred dance, sacred art, sacred architecture, college of how to help other people, how to do a nonprofit organization, how to do a grant raising, you know, fundraising stuff, how to do the legal stuff, how to do plumbing, electricity, car repair, how to help alcoholics, how to help drug users, how to help prisoners, College of Social Service, okay? And then, what else I forgot? Anyway, like colleges like that, or a tantric college, how's that? And a college of translation, all right? But we have this dream there. There'll be a retirement community there, Okay? Seriously. We have a specialist who's going to build one. And that would be like, I don't know, fit like maybe 1,000 people, would each have their own Adobe home. And they get free Dharma classes as they're getting old. I'm thinking all of us hippies who are reaching our 50s and 60s. It's not a joke, you know. They're going to need a place to go. There'll be a huge demand for it. A spiritually oriented retirement community in a nice place where your bones don't hurt and where someone can teach you to die right. Very missing thing. And those people will appreciate it. And already we have people signing up. Ex-hippies in their 60s. Okay. So that's the Diamond Mountain. It will also serve several thousand people in retreat there, and we need help developing it, okay, in Arizona. Last project that will be spoken about, oh, so that'll be Winston. The English program will be Aura. The Three Jewels will be Pelma, okay? The extension courses will be, I don't know who yet. Maybe you? We'll see. And the rest is covered, I spoke about. Last thing we're doing, we have a project to teach business people about Buddhism, Buddhist ethics, and use it to run their corporations more kindly and more profitably. I did it for 16 years in the diamond business. We started with $50,000 loan. That company now does $125 million in sales a year. And we did it all on Bodhisattva principles. And Forbes magazine came and said, how'd you do that? And we did an article about it. And Doubleday called me and said, we'd do a book about it. And now we decided to make like a whole institute dedicated to teaching business people how to use Buddhist principles without calling them Buddhism in their business life. Because we figure if you can make the corporations run in a Buddhist way, then something very interesting might happen in this country. You see what I mean? If the corporations are running along Bodhisattva vows, they would make much more money, and they'd be interested, I think. You see what I mean? We started to give talks like that. 200 people came after a radio interview in Australia, sold out, 8 a.m. in the morning. 200 crafty, rough Australian businessmen came to learn how to get more rich using Bodhisattva principles, and they loved it. Okay. Then we went to the other side of Australia and spoke at the Edmund Barton Institute. This is a big business institute. No? What's it called? Melbourne, sorry. Oh, in Perth it was the Western Australian University Business School of Business. Okay? So then you got these crusty professors, and about 150 of their students came. And we gave a talk about death and business. And they called me up the next morning and said, will you give the commencement speech in 2004 when you get out of retreat? You see what I mean? They loved it. So they really, the corporate people are not stupid. They're spiritually minded. They just didn't hear anything that was exciting or made sense yet. And so imagine what would happen if all the corporations started to get run by along Bodhisattva principles, whether you call it Buddhism or not, I don't care. Okay. Anyway, so that'll be given by Ernie Spears, who's over there, who will be directing that effort. Okay. So I'd like each of you people that I mentioned to have a 2-minute speech ready at the end of class, after the group thing next time, and that'll be the talk. And then you listen and hear if there's anything that strikes your fancy. And the motivation should be, I would like to help assure that people have the circumstances to see emptiness directly in this lifetime. Because all the cool stuff I mentioned really happens. And that's the goal of this whole institute, that's the goal of every class we've ever had here, is to get people to that stage. So you have to provide them with place to meditate, place to learn these things, good teachings, place to do public service for other people, place to serve the Dharma, and that's the idea. So if you heard something that sounds interesting to you, think about it, and it'll be discussed in more detail next Tuesday. Okay, thank you. That's a very holy class. And we'll do a dedication. Dedicated to everybody to see emptiness directly. All right? Okay. Puntala, you ready? Look at it, because you know this is the truth, capital T. You know? And you don't doubt it a single sentence anymore. So it's like swimming in this big sea of pure truth for the rest of your life. Okay? Cannot have a doubt anymore. Impossible. Okay? And it doesn't matter what happens to you personally, could never doubt again. Alright? Direct perception of your enlightenment. Okay? Well, second mental affliction. Intellectual belief in what you're seeing around you. If somebody came up to you and said, "Are you seeing things correctly?" you'd say, "No." Okay. You sure? Mm-hmm. All right. So you remove the mental affliction that we call the intellectual belief that things are self-existent. Okay. And you can't have it anymore. Denzin Kundan. Impossible. Okay. No matter how many years go by, no matter what happens to you for the rest of your life, you will never again believe that what you're seeing is correct. Okay? Period. And those two you remove forever. Okay? I'd like to leave it like that. It's an extremely holy subject. Okay? It's the most important thing you can hear out of this mouth. Okay? Practically. And just cook it. Okay? Don't ask me questions next class if you want. Okay? But leave it like that. To hear these words, you are one in a million. To hear these words stated on this planet in these days, you are one in a million. You know, if you ever get depressed or have a low self-esteem attack, reflect on that, okay? You are definitely, you are a very, very holy person, sacred being, okay? To hear these things in your lifetime spoken for an hour is extraordinary, okay? So enjoy it. Okay, we'll start again. Okay, I'm not going to keep you very long because it's hot and tired and everything else. Me too. We just talked about the direct perception of emptiness. You smell that it's very important. After the group discussions, the purpose here is that we talk about the future of Buddhism in America. And I think tonight, very, very briefly, it's incumbent upon us as Dharma people really to provide the atmosphere and the means by which people can see emptiness directly. See? 20 minutes experience based on the courses you've already had. You can see your own enlightenment. You see what I mean? You can see your own future lives. Everything changes, everything's over. It's like your whole life is over. It's like everything is finished, everything is gone. It's clear that you won't be suffering much longer. And it's this incredible feeling. So now the question becomes for people like us, A, how do we make sure we see it before we die? And then secondly, how do we provide the circumstances for other people to do that? You see what I mean? And so imagine what you need, you see? You need a place where people can meditate quietly for extended periods of time. Okay? They need that. They're going to need some kind of housing to be there. Okay? They're going to need something to live on. Okay? That won't tie up too much of their time, or they can't have time to see emptiness. Okay? It takes some effort. Okay? I mean, the whole thing about seeing it probably take 4, 5, 6 hours a day of work. You see what I mean? So they need some kind of part-time employment or some kind of living. You see what I mean? Next, they need good teachers. You know, they need to have a professional Dharma teacher, hopefully who's seen emptiness or close to seeing emptiness. They need authentic lineage. They need authentic scriptures. They need things in their own language, okay, that they can read to help them reach it. You're not going to get thousands of people who can read Tibetan and see emptiness directly. It's not going to happen. You need quickly to provide those materials in English, okay? And then you need opportunities to serve other people and take care of that aspect. You need opportunities to serve the Dharma, etc. Okay, so these are all the things we talked about, seeing emptiness directly. Now we're going to talk about the practicality of setting up those conditions for other people. Because guess what would be the karma for you to have those conditions? It's our duty to help other people do it. You see what I mean? It's not enough to have classes like this. You're only fulfilling one of the requirements. You need a place to stay. You need a place to meditate. You need pretty constant exposure to a good teacher. You need to get deeply into the subject. You need all of these causes. You need all of these conditions. So that's the idea. That's where this institute is going next. Okay, that's where this organization is going next. And that's to provide now the other requirements that you need, the other conditions you need. So it's not just study anymore. So that's why we're trying to now pump up the thing in Connecticut, Godstow. John and Amber have been spending Nancy, Karen, a lot of effort to get it going nicely, to get the place. They took out like 1,000 cubic yards of garbage like in the last 2 weeks and stuff like that. And we're trying to get, supposedly within a year, if we're good, we get the place deeded to us. Okay? We're still on probation. Okay? So the idea is to start setting up that place to be a place within an hour and a half of New York City that people could go and have all the other conditions they need to see emptiness directly. So, you know, you don't have to call this place Asian Classics Institute anymore. You could say it Seeing Emptiness Directness Directly Institute. Seriously, that's what we exist for. You got to keep that in mind, okay? It's not enough to have an organization. It's not enough to have a nonprofit thing. It's not enough to have classes in New York City. You have to have the whole program for someone to see emptiness directly. So now we have to move on. And the thing in Arizona is also the idea is that we move on to help create the conditions where people, we could take care of people. So we were out there for 2 weeks. We had meetings all day long. And the idea was, how do you get the physical conditions ready, like a fly trap for people to land and see emptiness directly? You see what I mean? And so we spent a lot of time on that. You've got to have a big enough piece of land for it to be quiet. You've got to have housing for people. You've got to have some kind of livelihood for people that have any money. You have to make it as cheap as possible to live there. Yet the goal there is $100 to $150 a month expenses to live there. Or free if we can pull it off. Okay? But the idea is to try to make it free for people. Or at worst, maybe $100 a month or $150 a month. But you would get a totally quiet place to meditate. You'd have meditation instruction. You'd have the right kind of food you need. You'd have opportunities to serve poor people. Like we're going to be doing service in Mexico, which is 40 miles away. We're already helping to set up like computer centers, Tibetan input centers in Mexico for children who are deaf and handicapped that don't have legs, like teenage boys and stuff like that. So that's already started. But the idea is that you would have a place to do social service. You would have a place to learn to meditate. You could stay there for a year or 2 years to concentrate on trying to see emptiness. You'd have the right scriptures. You'd have the right instructors there. You'd have all the conditions that a person needs. They just come. And everything else is taken care of for them. And that's our duty. You see, I mean, the people in this room, especially the people who are working on this, that's what we're here to do, is to provide all the necessary circumstances for a person to see emptiness directly. Okay, it is the most important thing you can do in your life. You have to try. And it has to become part of our life's purpose to set up the necessary circumstances for anyone in the United States, or, you know, now our organization has gotten a little bigger, okay, or anyone in the world basically can come. They just show up. Hopefully they write us ahead of time. And everything's taken care of. You know, please come and try to see emptiness. Okay? We'll take care of the place. We'll take care of your food. We'll take care of your other needs. You got the instructions. You're going to have the meditation. Everything's, the cushion's there. Sit down. Okay? And here's the social service you need to do. You can help build the buildings. It, whatever. All the common causes you need to see emptiness directly. So get that. That's my hope tonight. Get that in your heart. The Tibetans say Semla Jakshu. Say Semla
Jakshu.
It means please park it in the depths of your heart. It means put this thought in your mind and let it start growing. As a group, we have a responsibility to our clients, all 300 million of them, to set up the circumstances. I'm not talking about proselytizing or being missionaries or anything like that. I'm saying a nice quiet place in Arizona and a nice quiet branch in Connecticut where people can just write and say, I want to try to see emptiness directly. So you say, okay, come. And everything you need is here. And we'll take care of you. And we'll try to make sure that you've got the best shot you can before you die. Because it takes time. And it's best done while you're rather young. Not to say that old people can't see it, okay? But you need the energy. You can't wait, okay? While you have energy, you have to try to do it, okay? So I'm just saying, put it in your heart. We have started the process of creating two physical facilities, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, basically, where people can try to come and see emptiness directly. Because that's the only reason to have these classes. That's the only reason for me to teach for all these years. Translate all those things. It all has one goal. You know, you have to try to see emptiness directly, it's your duty and your responsibility and your pleasure to try to make sure that you help contribute to creating the conditions for other people to do that as well. Totally quiet place. People can sit in meditation, get the right instructions they need, the right teacher, everything, and they can see emptiness directly. Okay, so put that in your mind. As a goal. Next week, we don't have class Thursday, by the way, because it's a holiday, Buddhist holiday. We'll meet again next Tuesday. What I'd like to ask is that the various leaders of the various projects that we have and the projects that will be going on throughout the three-year retreat are going to get up and give a two-minute summary of what they do. And the reason I've asked them to do that is that they'll be having long meetings after that, and people can just show up and say, hey, I'd like to help you out. Okay? And I just want to put in your mind the various projects we have going on, and then think about it. Think about what you might be able to contribute. Okay? All of these are designed to help people see emptiness. Okay? So it's just a question of whichever one sounds sexy to you. And I'm not forcing you, and I'm not pushing you, and everything here is free. We work, we'll do it anyway. But it's really fun to think that you're part of the process of creating the conditions for people to see emptiness. It's like some kind of special feeling you get out of it, okay? You realize that you have never had a correct perception in your life, okay? Until the direct perception of emptiness. Okay. Sort of depressing. Okay. Question. When you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, are you having a correct perception when you have all these thoughts? No. Okay? Things don't change that way. Okay? In other words, when you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, A, you realize you've never had a correct perception. B, you realize you're not having them anymore right now either. Since you came down out of the direct perception of emptiness. But what's the big difference? You know you're crazy. Okay, I don't mean crazy. I'm being, metaphoric. But you, it's a big difference between before and after seeing emptiness directly. Now you realize that even though you're now seeing things again as self-existent, as coming from their own side, as having their own nature, you don't believe your own eyes. I always say it's like Jason tied. Is it Jason? Tied to the mast. Who went after the golden fleece? I think it's him.
Ulysses?
I don't know. Anyway, they're passing the land of the sirens. Who's that? Ulysses. Okay, let's say Ulysses. They're passing the land of the sirens. Sirens are these foxy ladies who stand at the edge of a dangerous shore and sing these beautiful songs. And the sailors always turn left into the land and they crash and they get eaten by the sirens or something like that. So Ulysses has heard about these sirens. So he asks his men, tie me to the mast tight. I'm the captain, but after you tie me to the mast, don't listen to me anymore. Whatever I say. And put wax in your ears. And row like hell. And never, don't turn into the sirens. But I want to hear what it sounds like, you know. So they tie him up, they put wax in their ears, they go past the land of the sirens, and he's like going crazy. He's like, let me go, you know, untie me, we gotta go see these ladies, you know. And your mind is just like that. You realize it at that time, you see, and you can't even remember what you saw enough to not do it anymore. Okay, I mean, you see what I mean? Like, you know what you're seeing is wrong, but you can't stop yourself. By the way, the day you stop yourself completely is just about nirvana. Okay? The last mental affliction is the one that makes you see things as self-existent. Okay? So actually, on the day you finish that, you've reached nirvana. All right? So that's a long way off. How long? Call it seven lifetimes. See? Between the moment you come down and seven lifetimes hence when you reach nirvana and enlightenment in this case, you will still see things as self-existent. We call that illusion. Gyumatabu. That whole seven lifetimes, the way things look to you, is illusion. Because you know they don't exist the way they seem to exist. But you can't do anything about it. You can't change the way you look at them. But you work on it. Don't interrupt me about this on this tonight, okay? Maybe at the end we'll answer some questions. But we got to go through this on a certain intensity, okay? So you know that you're not seeing things correctly. And you know they don't exist the way you think they exist. And that's the meaning of illusion in Buddhism. It doesn't have any other meaning, okay? Get used to it. I see this crap in books about dualism. It doesn't mean anything. It's ridiculous, okay? Forget it. What does dualism mean? It means, what it really means is the way things really are and the way things look to be are different, and that's dual. You see what I mean? Does the mind become emptiness in the direct perception of shunyata? No! Come on! The mind is a changing mental stuff, you know? Emptiness is 100% unchanging. Negative thing, the mind is a positive thing. That's all just like fairy tales made up by people who have not understand emptiness, they haven't seen emptiness, and they are really hurting people by putting out crap about emptiness when they don't understand it and they haven't seen it. Okay? So you have to be, about this subject, you've got to be a tough ass and call a spade a spade. That stuff is crap. Okay? It's not true. Okay? The only dualism going on, while you're in the direct perception of emptiness, are you aware of yourself? Can't be. So you can't be aware of the distinction between the subject and the object. Does that mean there's no subject? What, you disappear for 20 minutes? Does that mean there's no object? Emptiness isn't there? Does that mean you become the object? What, you become a negative permanent thing? Unchanging? Come on. You know, it's just written by people who don't understand it, okay? Haven't experienced it, okay? So forget all that stuff. Dualism, crap, and what was the other one? Illusion. So illusion only means that. It doesn't mean this pen doesn't exist. Come up here, let me poke your eye out with it. Okay? Anyone who thinks that that's what illusion means. You see what I mean? It's not like that. Illusion means the way it looks after that and the way it really is different, and you understand that. But you can't stop seeing it that way. And that's illusion. Forget everything else. Okay? Okay, that's my tough guy. Alright. That's about all I can think of right now. Okay, you can take all those realizations and group them into four parts. Some of them relate to suffering. Oh, sorry, one more. Okay, put one more down. You realize on the day you come out of the direct perception of emptiness that you have never done an unselfish thing in your life. Okay? Period. Okay? Even while you sat in the temple and recited prayers, in the back of your mind, every person who has not reached the direct perception of emptiness is thinking, do they realize I memorized this prayer? Is anyone listening? You know, I know better than he does, you know. And, you know, and you're praying for some guy who just died a terrible death of AIDS or something, and you're just worried about whether or not people notice that you know the ritual. And don't say you don't have it. Every being who has not seen emptiness directly is swimming in these thoughts all day long. Okay? Incapable of a non-self-interested act. Capable of struggling with your self-interest. You know what I mean? Capable of working against it on principle. You see what I mean? Okay, I really want this cookie. It's the last honey-flavored peanut butter cookie in Gusto. I'm a Buddhist monk. I just taught Tonglen. Okay. Take it, you know. But in your heart, you're like fighting. You know what I mean? And we're all like that. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, until the day you see emptiness directly, you are like that. And on the day you have your first direct perception of bodhicitta and emptiness, you realize you've been doing that your whole life. Okay? And it's a horrible trap that you've been in your whole life. Okay? And you can't get out of it until you see emptiness directly. I'll say right now, you cannot remove a mental affliction from your mind until the day you see emptiness directly. Period. Okay? Hopeless. Impossible to remove anger, jealousy, desire, competitiveness, pride without seeing emptiness directly. It's impossible. Okay? All the other methods are what we call band-aids. Okay? Yeah, you can hold your pride down. You know, get down there. No, get down. You know, okay? For a few minutes, you see what I mean? Desires, dislikes of other people, things like that. You can wrestle with them, but you cannot destroy them until the day you see emptiness directly. Impossible. Okay? So what do you got now? Some of these realizations relate to suffering. Like what? Like I saw my death. Like I realized I haven't had a pure thought in my whole life. You know, things like that. Some things relate to the source of suffering. I have never had a direct perception, correct perception, in my whole life. 65 times 60 times 60 times 24 times 7 times 52 times 47. Okay, it was 6, I don't remember. But, that many incorrect perceptions I've had. Okay, like, you could lump these into the source of suffering. I have not been able to do an unselfish act in my whole life. Okay, like, these are suffering. Into suffering, you can put that thing about reading other people's minds. You think it's fun? You know? No. Okay? I think it's a godsend that we're protected from it. Okay? No, it's bad enough to be in your own mind. Probably there's some kind of automatic mechanism that you're not allowed to read other people's minds until you can take it. Okay? So those go into suffering and where suffering comes from. Then we can say, you can see the end. You see what I mean? You saw your own enlightenment. 100% absolute, guaranteed, certain, enlightened in 7 lifetimes. Do you know what this guy feels like? Do you know what it's like to know? You see what I mean? Then who's going to tell you anything? You know what I mean? Who's going to sell you a vacuum cleaner? Or, you know, who's going to sell you on some other idea or anything else? What do you need from anybody after that moment? You see what I mean? You're not capable after that of needing almost anything. Okay? You saw your own enlightenment. So who's going to... What interest do you have in any worldly thing after that? You know, like 0, nothing. Okay, who can talk you out of it? Forget it. You know, I had a pramana, I had a tsema. That's the meaning of pramana. That's your first real pramana. I had a direct, correct perception of emptiness. I saw my own enlightenment. What do I need? You know, Kale Digme, Nagarjuna said, fearless. totally fearless. Don't need anything in this life anymore. And know you're going out. Know you're on the way out. It's like you stepped onto a conveyor belt and you are going to be free in seven lifetimes and you know it. And you're absolutely guaranteed. Okay? It's called Jin Shupa. Say Jin Shupa. Stream enter. I think nowadays it should be called the conveyor belt started. Seriously. It's exactly that idea. You is on a track that will lead in seven lifetimes to enlightenment. You've seen the enlightenment directly. You know what they will not call you. Add that to the list of realization. Okay? You know what they will not call you. They will not call you Michael the Buddha or something like that. Okay? There's something extremely important in knowing what they will not call you. You can figure it out later. Okay? But within seven lifetimes, you see it, you know it, you're a stream enterer. You don't have any worries, any normal worries. You don't have any kind of problems with other people, serious problems. You not have any interest in doing bad deeds. Nothing. Okay? Nothing. Like that. Out. Okay? Guaranteed. Can it come faster? Yes. How? If the person practices Tantra, they can speed up the process. What's the relationship between Tantra and this perception? It's the battery that drives Tantra. Okay? The deep perception of emptiness. Is it necessary to perceive emptiness directly to have tantric experiences? No. Okay? Alright? Is it necessary to perceive emptiness directly to have tantric experiences? No. Okay? Alright? Do you have to be a monk to perceive emptiness directly? Not at all. Okay? Does it help? Yes. But not necessary, okay? So don't ever think that. Do you have to be a monk to have tantric experiences? No. Okay. Does it help? Yes. Okay. But not necessary. It's not like that. Okay. Totally qualified man, woman, anyone who does what I described at the beginning of the class, you can see emptiness directly. You can have all these things happening. So far we got like suffering, the cause of suffering, how it's going to stop. Okay? And then you see how to do it. Okay? That's when you have all these ideas about Buddhism, you know. Buddhism is absolutely true. The books are absolutely true. The books must survive in this world. I must make sure that none of these books are lost. Okay? Somebody, somewhere will figure them out. Okay? How many people running around on the planet at any given time have seen emptiness directly? Take infinity and divide it by seven. Sorry, divide seven by infinity. And that gives you the number of people on this planet who have reached that stage at any given time in history. Okay? Because that's the odds of seeing emptiness directly. Okay? Take seven and divide it by infinity, which is how many past lives you've had. And those are roughly the odds of meeting someone who's seen emptiness directly. Okay? And I'm not kidding. Okay? So then what do you do? Oh, so those four things. Saw the end of it, sorry. Saw suffering, saw what's bringing about your suffering, saw the end of suffering, saw the method to get to that end, which includes bodhicitta, okay? What do we call those four things? How about we call them the four truths of a person who's seen emptiness directly? Okay? What's the Sanskrit word for a person who's seen emptiness directly? Arya. What's a really stupid translation of Arya? Noble. Okay. Get it? Okay? I don't know how this Four Nobles Truths thing started, but we've got to stamp it out. It's our responsibility. Okay? Nothing to do with noble. You're an Arya. What's an Arya? In Tibetan, Pakpa. Say Pakpa.
Pakpa.
A person who has seen emptiness directly. And then you is a totally, totally, totally different person. There's only two people, there's only two kinds of beings in the universe. Those who've seen emptiness and those who haven't. Period. That's the only distinction that matters in the universe. Forget man, woman, old, fat, young, skinny, doesn't matter. The only meaningful distinction in the world is, have you seen emptiness directly or not? There's a very tiny group of people over there, and there's billions upon billions of suffering people over there. And they're totally different. Arya means a zillion miles higher. The word Arya means a zillion miles higher. Okay? Totally different level of being. Okay? And never again will they come down to the to what we call children. Chiba, sosokewa, normal person. Okay? Chotong, those who see things as self-existent. You see what I mean? Those are totally different level. Completely different level. Now you're on a totally, totally different level. Guess what? How many jewels are there? Pelma. How many jewels? 3 jewels, okay? Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Buddha refuge, Dhamma refuge, Sangha refuge. You just became 2 of them. Okay? Which 2? Sangha, okay? You became one of the few people in the universe who have seen emptiness directly. And you just became Dhamma. The Dhamma refuge is in your mind. The direct perception of emptiness is the Dhamma. Okay? Is the ultimate Dhamma refuge. Okay? Which means you just, in 20 minutes, became the thing that every Buddhist in the world is praying to. How's that? Okay? You just became 2 of the 3 refuges. Why do they call you refuge now? You can protect people. Okay? You can protect people. People come to you, if they understand what you say, if they try to do what you said, you've protected them in an ultimate way. Okay? If they pull it off in this lifetime, then within 7 lifetimes, they will become a being who is incapable of suffering. Forever. Okay? That's protection. Better than, what do you call it? Irish spring, whatever. Okay? This is protection. You become 2 of the 3 jewels. Okay? 2 of the 3 refuges. You become. Have you become the 3rd one yet? Have you met the 3rd one? Yeah. The real Buddha refuge is the emptiness of the Buddha, which last week we learned is Ngoniku, Dhammakaya. You become. I'm sorry. You perceive directly the emptiness of the Buddha. Okay? So you've covered all 3 refuges. You are 2 of them. You've met the 3rd one directly. Okay? In one swoop. So you're either this kind of person or this kind of person. So now you know what Four Noble Truths means. It's a bad translation of about 16 different ideas that come to a person who's just seen emptiness directly. Okay? Never forget that. Because that thing is taught very, it's butchered from week to week around the world by people teaching the Four Noble Truths. Okay? All it means is those realizations that a person has just after they see emptiness directly. Okay? Couple more things. Well, I'll tell you a story. So anyway, that's called jetop. You better know the word, I guess. Say jetop.
Jetop.
Jetop. Jetop means the aftermath. The aftermath. After what? Direct perception of emptiness. So those next 10 hours or so are called jetop. They are still part of the path of seeing, which is the term that's used to describe the direct perception of emptiness and the things that happen right after it. Okay? So you are on the path of seeing for, say, 24 hours, for the whole day. Okay, you're on the path of seeing. It's called, the first part is called what? Wunsum, or Nyamshat. And then Jetop. Jetop means the aftermath. And during the aftermath, you see the 4 Arya Truths directly. In those, all those things I told you can be divided into the 4 Arya Truths. Okay? Now, next what happens? Get up, leave the temple, maybe bump into your teacher, something like that. You got to go get it done. Okay? Take your car, don't tell anybody, drive to the nearest town, go find a used car dealer, park there, get out, go up to the guy. You want to buy a car? You need money for a diamond, right? So you got a red Firebird, expensive car in those days. And you say, I'll sell you this for whatever you give me. I need money. So you read the guy's mind. He says, this guy's a real fool. And he says, what do you do for a living? He says, I'm a dishwasher at a church. You know, and he says, he's like, real fool. And then he says, well, I'll give you $100 for the car. And you can hear him saying, you know, I'm cheating the guy. Let's see if he goes for it. And then you say, fine, that'll be fine. I'll take $100. And he gives you $100. You say, can I have a ride to town? Because it's out of town, you know. Car dealers are always a little farther out. He says, okay, I'll take you to town, you know. And he's like, tells his assistant, you know, at least we better give the guy a ride fast, then he won't change his mind. She says, okay, take this guy to town, drop him off where he wants to go. Okay, go to town, go to a jewelry store, buy a diamond, okay? Get the bus back to the church or the temple, okay? Put the diamond in there. Go take the diamond, put it on the altar where someone may never notice it, okay? Because you see, now you've understood what offering means. First time, a truly selfless offering. You're not buying, what do they call those things? Schoolboys? Schoolboys, right? What's the company? Lou Schoolboys. You're not buying Lou Schoolboys, which happens to be your favorite cookie, to offer with the full knowledge that they'll be cleaning the altar the next morning. Okay? All right? For the first time, you make a true offering. You know, you could burn a $100 bill, whatever. Throw the diamond in the ocean. Take the diamond, put it on the altar where somebody may never find it. It's okay. It's a true offering. Okay? Of the closest thing to emptiness. Okay? And then the day is finished. I mean, the rest of the day will be like all these amazing things. You realize you could perform miracles if you worked on it. Okay? Like you could change the actual substance of objects. You know? Your teacher says, could you make that brick into gold? And you're like, why is he asking me that? You know? And then you realize you could. If you kept up this meditation, okay? You could perform miracles, things like that, okay? Technical question. Oh, by the way, by the next morning you've reached what we call Goma, path of habituation. Path of habituation. You will be on that path for how many lifetimes? Seven? It'll take you seven lifetimes to get used to what you saw, and especially to what you realized. During those seven lifetimes, you will use that information to overcome, one by one, your mental afflictions. Okay? First the obvious ones, the gross form, and then the less gross forms, and then finally the very subtle forms, ending in the final mental affliction, which is the perception of things as self-existent. And then the seeds for that. Then things won't even appear that way to you anymore. Then you've reached enlightenment if you have bodhicitta. Okay? And it's over. And that's the whole process, okay? That's the path of seeing, that's the direct perception of emptiness, all right? And that's all you have to say about it. Oh, when you see emptiness directly, do you remove any mental afflictions? You actually technically remove three, but two of them are more important. What are they? Doubt about Buddhism. Okay? Incapable of doubt again. Anyone in the world could come up, attack you, say bad things about you, say you didn't see emptiness, blah, 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 blah. Okay. You know? You cannot have a doubt after that. You cannot doubt a single page of Buddhist scripture again. The way you approach scripture from now on is like you bow before you look at it because you know this is the truth, capital T. You know, and you don't doubt it a single sentence anymore. So it's like swimming in this big sea of pure truth for the rest of your life. Okay?